हरे ओ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यंकरवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Shankya views Prakriti as a compassionate mother that provides everything to Purusha that he needs to understand his true nature, distinct from Prakriti, in her manifested and unmanifested states. Prakriti manifests herself out of compassion for Purusha, just as a mother's milk is produced out of compassion for a child. Unless it is somehow contaminated, the milk from the mother's breast is always helpful to the child. And likewise, the evolutes of Prakriti are helpful to Purusha unless they are contaminated by the predominance of Raja and Tamas, false identification, selfish action, possessiveness, or lack of discrimination. Right, so in here is that the point that if we're describing Vaishnavism, then these things are correct. Prabhupada describes the same thing, is that when the living entity appears in this world, then all of his maintenance appears with it. It's actually before him. Yeah, all his, whatever it is to take care of him, his food, whatever is necessary, is before. Just as before the child is born, the mother already has milk in the breast. So it's already there. Right? So then the child is born. So they're taking that principle, but they're not understanding. What's happening here is because the Purusha is being dealt with as a jiva, but at the same time there's many attributes we'll see are coming up, where it's actually being mixed with the Supreme Lord, like that. Not in the way of control and enjoyer, but in the position. So, yeah. So what they're stating is correct from our viewpoint, but from their viewpoint, then the problem is it's incomplete. Therefore, then there's going to be need of a problem here. So, yeah, so it's the saying is beneficial. So then they don't have a problem in interacting with the material energy. But it must be done in the mode of goodness. It must be done according to, you know, appropriate action. But if it's not, then that's contaminating. But it's not the fault of the material energy. At the same time, it's the jiva being attracted or identifying with those. But at the same time, is they're not also putting much blame on him. It's more just, you know, that's the way it is. Both Prakriti, yes.
So in our philosophy, that, you know, the modeling aspect of material nature, would that be what we call Annapurna? You know, sometimes we see that it's...
Annapurna, that's can be one man, but even just as a general position, the material energy is nourishing the living entity. The problem is he's using his energy that he gets from that inappropriately. So it's not that he won't be chastised for what he does wrong. But the material energy, her interest is to see that he's freed from the material energy and establishes himself back in his position as servant of Krishna, because she's a servant of Krishna. But in this definition, she's not specifically a servant of Krishna, nor is he. So then what's the impetus for manifestation or liberation? Right? So these things, so they have to provide one, that's the thing. They have to provide, and because they're so intelligent, then it'll have some connection to the Shastra. It's just misapplied. Right? That's the thing about it, is it'll back itself up with the Shastra, but it'll be misapplied because it's not complete, not full. And so there, that incompleteness, that's what creates the atheism. Right? So they're all atheistic because they're not accepting the Supreme Lord, the living entity, and the material nature actually as they are. But they're they're agnostic in that they're accepting the Shastra, they're accepting higher authority. You know what I'm saying? You know, just like someone who is appreciating that God is the supreme, you know, person, the supreme control is the supreme, you know, everything. But then you ask him what his form is like, they'll say he doesn't have a form. That's actually an atheistic point of view. Right? But you won't necessarily use the terminology because they themselves are actually wanting to deal with him as a person. Right? So you won't call, you know, somebody who's practicing a monotheistic religion an atheist. Because an atheist means who doesn't accept that there's a Supreme Lord. But at the same time as their incomplete understanding or acceptance of God is actually atheistic. Right? Because atheism just means it's against the philosophy. Right? It's that they accept that there's a supreme single God, that's correct. But that they say he doesn't have a form, that's incorrect. That's against the philosophy. So part of it's theistic, part of it's atheistic. So Vaishnavism should be complete. Everything is theistic. Does that make sense? So in these kind of discussions, you want to look at more the moods that are there. You know what I'm saying? It's not as necessarily, it may be, but not necessarily a specific manifestation as in Annapurna. But Annapurna, she does take care of everybody and like that. But it's not, she's not just taking care of Annapurna. This you know, this tree over here gets water in the pot. You know what I'm saying? So she's taking care of that. You know, but where it's an obvious manifestation of that and she's giving facility, then she's known as Annapurna. You know what I'm saying? But she has that mentality, whether she's manifesting that form or not. She's always youthful, whether she manifests the form of Kumari or not. You understand? She's always the, in this way, identifies as the daughter of the Himalayas, whether she's manifest as Parvati or not. You understand? So that's just for the pastimes those are there. So the pastimes of the specific manifestation, we're talking. Less obvious than that. It's not necessarily higher, but it's less obvious. You know what I'm saying? Because all this stuff, very technical and all this, but the personal form is higher. But it's no less, you know, complex, no less developed. It's just you don't have to deal with it on this technical level because you're not dealing with the philosophy on this, you're dealing with the rasa on this level. So now we're dealing with tattva on this level. But this fineness that's there, then as that's cultivated, then with time, that will be applied to rasa. You understand? So the problem is the hajjis apply it to rasa immediately. But because they haven't gone through the science first, for them it's emotion, so it's actually more of an art. So it won't actually be very developed. It's more just sentiment. But here you can see the acharyas, because science is always developed before art. Right? So therefore then, the scientific elements that are here, that the intelligence becomes very refined and discriminatory. Right? Then, and it's dealing with subtleties, and then you can work with the subtleties in rasa, because you see the form, but there's some subtleties there in that rasa, that's what you have to deal with. The form is an indication, but what you have to deal with is some subtleties. So in the same ways, the forms in this world are an indication of the tattva, but the tattva is still more subtle. You know what I'm saying? The tattva causes this manifestation just as the rasa causes a particular manifestation. Someone is happy, therefore they manifest in a certain way as happy. Right? And by the manifestation you can tell how happy they are. Rupa Goswami gives 6 stages of happiness. You know, just from a slight little, you know, hardly even detectable smile to a full smile to where you can see the teeth, you know, and then where there's, you know, laughter and that, and then I can't remember what the next one is, but the final one is you're laughing and jumping up and down and like that kind of a thing. Does that make sense? So you can see that, but you know the intensity of happiness. So it's happiness that you're perceiving. You know, it's not that they're jumping up and down, that's the happiness. No, that's the symptom of how much happiness is there. So in the same way as the interaction of Krishna and his energies, then you can see the manifestation as it is here. So it has a direct link. You know, so cultivation of the one then gives rise to the other. So some are saying, oh, well, all this Vaidhi and all this philosophy, that's not appropriate. We just get into the rasa. But how will they appreciate it unless they've developed their intelligence? Unless they're working on pure love. Then we have no complaint. But if they're not working on it, then they're going to have to work with their intelligence. And then that refined intelligence, how are they going to make those distinctions? Does that make sense? Both Prakriti and Purusha are infinite and eternal. And when Prakriti is in her unmanifest state, she is so intermingled with Purusha that he becomes anxious to realize his own true nature. Right? Because they're saying intermingled with, but where is she actually? Is she ever intermingled with the soul? No, it's with the Lord. Right? And like that. And so his anxiousness is to interact with his potencies, but with his internal potency. So here they're not really making a distinction there, because the Lord in the state of, it means as in the state of Atmarama, then there's no distinction between himself and his energies, right? Because they're not manifest. So there's just him, but his energy are present. So then at some point they become manifest, because here it says, he becomes anxious to know his own true nature, which is rasa. Right? Does that make sense? Purusha's anxiety allows him to come even closer to Prakriti, and it is this move or intention towards her that inspires the latent forces in Prakriti to function. Right? They're intermingled in here, and then he wants to, you know, identify himself as separate. So therefore, then he gets closer, and then, you know, it means in specific, and then there's interaction, and then there's manifestation. But the interesting thing here is we see is what happens is in the reality, then Krishna is in the state of Atmarama where rasa is not manifest, but he is himself. Right? He is rasa, but there's not interaction with his energy, so there's no taste of rasa. So to taste that, then there's creation.
As far as Lord.
Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah, as far as Lord. So then there's creation, then property is manifest. So he gets closer to it and interacts with it. Then he can know his nature, which is that of, you know, Rasa Raj. Right? So this same kind of element, they're taking a portion of that and attributing that quality to the soul. Right? Otherwise, why is it that the soul, why would there be creation? Right? Because he wants to know himself as separate. But here, is self as separate means they're together, and then he wants to be separate so that he can see himself as separate. But there is Krishna wants to be separate so that he can, they can interact in relationship. You understand? So it's the opposite. The one is you interact so you can become liberated, but here it's you interact so that there's rasa. You understand? So here Zen Prakriti means his whole, all his nature, not just material nature, because they're not making a distinction here. Prakriti is not just called material nature, it's just all there is Purusha and Prakriti, which is true, but that Purusha is Krishna, and the Prakriti is the Surup Shakti. But here they're taking it, Purusha meaning the jiva and Prakriti meaning the material energy, because that's all they know. They can't know anything beyond that. Right? Does this make sense? You seeing the difference here between their position and how, because they don't take it far enough, then to answer the questions they have to attribute qualities of the spiritual nature to the material and the nature of Krishna to the, or Vishnu to the soul. You understand? This is where then problems come up. They don't make this distinction.
But if they don't accept Vishnu, how do they understand his nature in the first place?
They're not, because when they say Purusha, they mean the jiva. And when they say Prakriti, they mean material energy. I've gone back and forth between the two. So this point is they're saying both, it's like that, let's say like this, both the material, here, let me read it like that, both material energy and the soul are infinite and eternal. And when the material nature is in an unmanifested state, means pradhan, she is so intermingled with the soul that the soul, becomes anxious to realize his own true nature. Right? That's how they're seeing it. But that definition then is actually not attributed to the soul as to like that. Or here is, he once becomes anxious to realize his own true nature, which is this conditioned nature. Right? If you're taking it a step down. You know, so he wants to, you know, in other words, if everything is all mixed together, how do you taste rasa? Right? And so the rasa he wants to taste is material. So then he would have to interact with the material energy, and therefore there would be manifestation. But here they leave out the, you know, super soul or the Supreme Lord as being the one who is actually doing that, that controlling the material energy. Thus, Purusha initiates the manifestation of the universe, and thus Prakriti helps Purusha realize himself as distinct from her. But when, through ignorance, Purusha forgets his purpose in coming closer to Prakriti, then instead of discriminating himself from the unconscious principle, he entangles himself with it. In other words, he's interacting with material nature to realize his own nature, which is separate from it. But if he, if through ignorance he's not acting properly, he'll be overwhelmed by the modes of nature, therefore identify with Prakriti. So they're mixed together, and now he coming closer, he identifies with it more. So it's actually the opposite of what he was planning. So through knowledge, then he frees himself from that, and then comes to the transcendental state, the liberated state. Does this make sense? Are we able to make these distinctions between which one we're talking about, one or the other? It means about Shankar, about our philosophy? Yeah? Everybody's comfortable? Yeah? You're comfortable? Yeah? The moment he remembers his purpose and discriminates himself from the material manifest world and from its cause, he realizes his true nature and recognizes his freedom. Just as a chef continues cooking until the food is cooked and stops the moment it is ready, so Purusha continues to flow in the current of life until his purpose is fulfilled. Right. So he, in other words, understanding that he's distinct from the material energy, but until he comes to that full realization, he still continues to interact with the material energy. But now in goodness as opposed to passion and ignorance. So that frees him from, because if you deal with the material nature from the platform of goodness, free from fruitive desire, then you will become liberated from the material energy. That's just how it works. But, so that's why the processes of all these persons and ours is exactly the same in getting out of material energy. The difference is they think now work is done, while we understand that's just the beginning. Right? Because you only develop love for Krishna when you have no affection for the material energy. Right? So, therefore, liberation is for the purpose of getting out of material energy. Right? So that you can develop love for Krishna. You can get into the spiritual platform. Does that make sense? But they don't see that, so they just stop at getting out of material energy. So here they do it by understanding the male-female principle, right? And the difference between the soul and Prakriti. The other is the Vaisheshika. Then you're understanding the difference between the atoms and the manifestation of these atoms in creation, and how that is different from the soul, and this way becomes liberated. Or And in Nyaya, then the same basic principle is there, is that they understand the material energy is something separate from the living entity. And through the process of logic, they separate themselves from that. Right? In other words, they have some way that they're going to separate themselves through knowledge. One is focusing on the logic itself, the process of logic. One is focusing on the atomic theory. And this one is focusing on the masculine-feminine principle. Understand? But from any case, any of these platforms, you can liberate yourself. Right? And we'll see yoga will give another way to do that as that comes up. The moment the highest goal of life, realization, is obtained, he stops flowing in that current. Likewise, a dancer performing to entertain her audience continues to dance until the audience is satisfied. The moment the course of dance, which depends on the audience's duration of enjoyment, is fulfilled, the dancer stops her dancing. In the same way, the great dancer, Prakriti, continues her dance until her discriminating function is accomplished. The moment she accomplishes her object, she withdraws herself back into her unmanifest state. The purpose of the manifestation of Prakriti is to show herself to Purusha so he can realize that he is distinct from her. The moment Purusha realizes that he is not the external objects, then the entire manifestation is withdrawn. So then simultaneously, he stops, he continues to be involved until his realization is complete. Just as the example of the chef cooks until the preparation is complete. The same way as she then interacts with the jiva, with the Purusha, until that is accomplished. So then she, like the dancer, is dancing until the dance is complete. So in this way, she's performing her activities, he's involving in those activities until he comes to the realization. Then he no longer interacts, and she goes back to her pradhan.
So that basically, in our philosophy, that's when she becomes again yoga maya. And he
goes she goes into yoga maya, and he takes up service to Krishna. Yes, because as we see here, is this works very nicely. You know, if everything's happening all together, and then going away altogether. But the thing is the process is always going on. That means the material energy stops functioning as material energy for an individual when the individual is realized and is dealing with yoga maya instead of mahamaya. Yes, that's a good point. It is self-centered.
Because, you know, the whole manifestation was drawn when, you know, when yoga loga is...
No, the whole thing is Purusha-centric here. You know, yeah. So the problem comes is that why? Okay, it means as a compassionate mother, but why does she do this and why that if she's unconscious matter in the first place? Of course, through the thing of reflection, it's the soul who's reflecting these things. But that means then that compassion would have to come from himself. So he's actually becoming compassionate on himself and his dead matter, and it's not doing anything. But they attribute personality to it. Because it actually is personality, but in their definition, they can't actually establish that. So in the technicalities, it's the reflection of the soul's consciousness that makes the material energy appear conscious. Like that. But then in here, it takes on their own personality, right? So that's also that element of God is working with the creation, and it takes on its own nature, and then you can't control it. You understand? So just as God can't control the creation, something else does, and it's always more trouble than it's worth. So in the same way as they use that here in philosophy like this, that it goes material energy, but here she's very kind and all that, and even though he's not in control, when it gets, you know, he's having a bad hair day, so he's identifying more with it in passion and ignorance, so he's suffering. But at the same time as, you know, he has to remember, you know, these things. And then it starts going, because that's what she's wanted all along. So it doesn't work so much, but the principle is there. But at least this is a little bit more sattvic. But otherwise, nowadays, you have, you know, the theme that, you know, man makes computers, and then the computers one day figure out, you know, what do we need men for? You know, we can push our own buttons, you know, and then they try to get rid of the men and everything like that. And so that goes on and on again, and it's very, very popular, and people pay great money to see it and read it and everything like that. But it's the same principle that we attribute to God. He's created something that then goes out of his control, and he can't control it. So it's the same principle. And then as Satan makes trouble, so therefore your computer makes trouble. Like that.
You know, the idea that, you know, nature withdraws herself when the man gets degraded. Isn't that a little bit borderline of, you know, this Buddhist concept that is the chair really there, if I'm not there to be aware of the chair?
Yeah, yeah. You could say we have these Buddhistic things that if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear, does it make any sound? You know, these are the things that keep them occupied. Like that. Useless things. The sound of one hand clapping. You know, like that. Oh, that's easy. Yeah, yeah. No. You go up to the Buddhist and you say, I'll show you one hand clapping. And you get it close enough to him and then slap him in the face. Says, that's one hand clapping. Like that. So it's like that. Krishnas have their how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. But I mean, it's very obvious. Depends on the size of the angel, right? Like that. It's not a head trip, you know. It's just, you know, it's obvious how it depends on how big the angels are. Is that okay? So they're always going to have these things. That's where all these other philosophies come from. In other words, the Vedic philosophies have come from the Vedas. Non-Vedic philosophies are coming out of these Vedic philosophies. They won't necessarily take one thing straight. It's not that a modern philosopher is espousing one school. They may take an aspect of a school. They may represent it fully. They may not. Generally, they never do. They may have bits from different ones, different schools. Right? But they're all going to be based on these principles. They're not going to come up with anything different because these are the greatest material minds, you know, being applied mundanely. So you're not going to get better than this. So any modern philosopher is going to be using parts of these intelligence. Like that.
So Buddhism is not considered Vedic, but it was started by the Lord himself. So would you comment on that?
It started by the Lord himself because, you know, people get tired of, when you get tired of karma and jnana, then you become angry. Because there isn't anything else. So then you take up Buddhism. And then when you get sick of that, then you get back into karma again. Buddhism is do nice, be good, and don't get involved. It's jnana in a way, yes, it's on that side, but the point is all of if a philosophy is going to be popular, it has to have be good, be nice, and there has to be some supreme. Otherwise, it cannot become popular. You understand? It will not. Without these two, it will not become popular. So therefore, what do Buddhists do? You know, other than meditate, you know, they're good and nice because they believe in karma. You know, but so you perform your duties without desire for attachment, so you become free from material energy. So it's the same process. Does that make sense? So nice karma is the method to get out of the material world, but you have to have a process to get into the spiritual world, right? Therefore, Narad Muni, he preaches nice karma and pancharatra. Right? So Naishkarmi is going to get you out of the material world and Pancharatra is going to get you into the spiritual world. Right? And Pancharatra is going to regulate your life so that you don't get involved in the material world. You're able to perform the Naishkarmi. So that's what he preaches of these two.
So it's like the Buddhist gets some portion of the knowledge of karma and jnana without having to know that the Veda is not there.
Because is there something outside of Krishna? Yes? No? No. So they're going to have to be talking philosophy of the Vedas anyway. Modern philosophies who never even heard of the Vedas are still talking in connection with the Vedas. But they're either properly representing or misrepresenting. You don't have something else. Is there something other than seven notes? Is there something other than seven colors? Huh? It's 22 if you want to be exact. But there's seven positions. The 12 notes are, they stand on their own. A, and then what's next? Right, but is it called, is it just called, does it have another name? Or it's a form of A? Is it, then it's a form of B? But the point is there's only seven notes. And then you have flats or sharps of those. Right? The Veda goes farther and does quarter notes. Yeah, okay. So you still only have seven notes. So that's the thing, is you only have, philosophy means Vedic. But they may be approaching it from the Vedas or approaching it not from the Vedas. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the thing. So Buddhism, like any other philosophy that's not Vedic, will be based on principles of it, but just how much they'll understand and follow, that's according to their own, you know, understanding. Yeah? And they'll all fit into karma and jnana. That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That's what we were studying Tattva Vivek. You weren't here for Tattva Vivek. Because that means there's all world philosophies, including Buddhism, they all fit into category of karma or jnana. That's all. You know, be good, be nice, and reap the benefits of material happiness and enjoy, or be good, be nice, and get out of this place. That's all there is. Right? Then when the living entity gets tired of that, then he goes for monotheism, because he gets scared that nothing's going to work. Right? Then you're be good, be nice, and then you'll get what? You go to the heavenly planets. You'll get out of the regular mundane, so supposedly you're liberated, but you'll be liberated right here in the material world. Right? In your own backyard will turn into Eden. Right? Like that, somehow or another. Like that. Mm-hmm. In actuality, pure consciousness, Purusha, is subject neither to bondage nor to liberation, because he is never really in bondage. The concepts of bondage and liberation, pain and suffering, are the result of ignorance or false understanding. Right? In other words, here they're also then taking is that, yes, it is true that it is, but he is not subject to it because he actually is always Brahman. But at the same time is, we have to be careful in here that it doesn't then take on the Mayavadi principle of that it's illusion, because we have to remember is that this philosophy is Parinamavad. So they accept transformation. So his consciousness transforms and he becomes absorbed in this cause and effect. Then he, you know, how you say, understands and then pulls out of that and frees himself. Like that. So he doesn't have to be free because he technically already is, because that's the way it is. The jiva thinks, that's why he saw his condition, he thinks he has to work within this framework. Because he wants to. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, it's like the man thinks I have to, you know, do a certain job or this or that because I have to make money, take care of the family, do this and that. But that's because he wants to. Right? Yes.
Does he want to think that he has to, or does he want to do the activity?
Probably he'll have to. It's like to do the activity means to do what he wants, he has to do. In other words, if he wants to have a family, he has to work. So then it's probably easier for him to think, I have to work. You know, because if he thinks about if I want to work, then there'll be a problem. Just like in, I don't know if it's there now, but, what's his name? Maharaj from Japan. No, not that, not so Japan. No, less Kavichandra Maharaj. He was explaining that in Japan, In the etiquettes of interaction, you don't ask how they are. It's just like academics don't come to conclusions. Japanese don't ask each other how they are. you talk about the weather, or you know, some little light, you know, common point of knowledge that, you know, everybody can relate to. Because, you know, it's not controversial whether it's cloudy or not. But if you bring up something about politics or economics, it might cause a fight, you know. So, therefore, weather is just, you know, it's cloudy. You don't say it's good or bad. You just, it's cloudy. Oh, yeah, very cloudy today, yes. You know. Yesterday wasn't so cloudy. No, no. Like that, you know. Yeah. I heard on the news tomorrow won't be cloudy. Oh, yes. Yeah. Like that. Because if they think actually about how they are, they'll have a nervous breakdown. Because they hate their job, they hate commuting 2 hours every day to go there and 2 hours back. The situation at home, everything, you know, just the way the society is and so cramped and all that. How much obligation is there? There's no individual development and all these different things. Then they're not fine. So you never ask how they are. Right? Does that make sense? So the same way is that the jiva has to think, this is what I have to do. Because technically, he can just not do it. But then, you know, then things wouldn't seem to be in his control and go the way it would. Then he'll have to depend upon the Lord. Does that make sense? So he has to think that I have to do this. But that's the conditioning. See, he you know, he's quite sincere about it. Right? Like Prabhupada mentions that the living entities on earth can't move around freely in the universe because they think they can't. They're conditioned to think, I have to walk around here. Narad Muni doesn't think like that, so then he just, you know, leaves. He flies in the air because he doesn't think, I can't do it. You understand?
Does that mean I had a dream last night where I kind of like that? I was like, oh, I can fly.
That's called, there's more air in your body. If you're flying, there's more vata.
Yeah.
If there's fire and that, then there's more pitta. And if there's a lot of water, then there's kapha.
Yeah.
You know, so you might be flying over water, so then you know it's vata and kapha.
I just kind of had this realization that I was like, oh, I didn't like, it's just in my mind that I like place these limitations on myself.
Yeah, well, that's what it is. But just be sure that your limitations in your mind are completely removed before you try it. Because in other words, if you do fly, then you are liberated. But in other words, the liberated soul can do those things because they don't identify with it. You're conditioned, then you will need to keep your feet on the ground.
This is where, you know, from Raman, then the interaction with Paramatma starts.
The interaction with?
Paramatma, because this is where they get those siddhis, right? Because the person is not getting to siddhis, but the yogi...
Yeah, no, you can say like that, but the point is the whole element of karma, that's Paramatma. He's controlling it. So that the energies that are going on, all this description of how the energies work, that's the Brahman platform. So that's been described on the platform of Nyaya, Vaisheshika, and now Shankya. But Paramatma then is a higher level because then you're dealing with karma. You're actually dealing with who's controlling all that, how it's going on, the mechanics of that, and your involvement with it. While in the others, either they don't get involved with that, you know, like in the first two, they work with some supreme lord. It was transcendental and all that, but he's doing all those things, but they don't necessarily bring him in as Paramatma. If they did, it would work, but they're not involving themselves with him. He's not of consequence. It's simply you have to understand that you're not part of this material nature and get out. Right? So they never get beyond that Brahman understanding, but Brahman understanding is the neutral state. So you can't stay in a neutral state. So even if they come to that platform of what they would call perfection, but in a very short time, they'll be back again because they haven't attained prema. That's the only way to actually be liberated. Yes.
There's a story in the Bible or part of the Bible, Maharaj, where I'm not sure, one of the apostles, Jesus comes walking across the water. I'm not sure who it is, Simon, Peter, someone. Jesus says, you can come walk towards him. And so he gets out of the boat and starts walking across the water, but then he starts sinking. And Jesus says, like, it's because of you were doubting. Like, whilst he has faith, he's walking across the water, but then he doubts, what's going to happen when I sink and start moving?
And then?
I think Jesus explains to him as well, that you should just have faith.
And then? They don't tell after that. So then the guys in the boat had to come save him, right? Okay. But then the biggest fish they ever saw came along. Okay.
With that story, would you say that when the disciples started watching on the water, was he liberated at that stage?
No, he's dealing with faith. The point is so... He's working on that principle. So he's not doubting that he can do it. The conditioning means you doubt you can do it. Right? But what I'm saying is for here is either through siddhis or through faith, or if one's liberated, then one is not worried about these things. But there's no, one is not interested to do anything else. So Sukadeva Goswami is liberated. He could fly around, but why should he bother? You know, walking works quite fine. You know what I'm saying? There's no interest in flying around.
Oftentimes we hear a lot when they say that, you know, whatever you believe you can achieve.
Yeah, yeah. But the point is why are they saying that? It's not philosophy. That's mechanics of artha. Right? Whatever you believe, then you can achieve. Okay, so now the process is you have a field of action. Right? So you have to identify with that field and see that there's some benefit you can get from that field. If you don't believe that, then relationship with that, between that field and the action to get a result will never happen. So for most people, so some have observed people due to lack of, due to insecurity or lack of, you know, how you say, faith in themselves, they don't do anything. Well, if they just do that, then everything would work nicely, right?
Independent of the karma involved, whether you should.
That's another thing. Does it work for anybody? Let's see. How many devotees you know have read these self-help books, gone to seminars and that? How many of them are successful?
None.
And how many people that are successful, that never went to those seminars, are still successful? You understand? So it's because it's incomplete, the philosophy. It just sounds good because it gives you that self-boost. But you still have to go through two more stages. You still have to get to the point of needing that, having a goal and needing that, and then having the action. So they're working on if you see that you can do it, then you'll get attached to it and you'll do it. But they don't explain that to you that you have to do that. That's why the system fails. Others will take it a step further. You want to do, but then you're running around like a chicken with his head cut off. So they tell you to be goal-oriented. See the goal. See where you're going and all that. But they're already taking it that you're already inspired and know you can do it. Right? Right? And others, you know, talk about plans. Make your plan. You know, not a goal, but what's your plan so you get it done and efficiently. So they're talking about the action, but they don't talk about your goal or, you know, your inspiration. So these will be all the philosophies of your self-help gurus. But all those things are three out of four parts of our philosophy. Right? That's the field of action. They'll talk about it, but they don't understand that it's a, so you have to have all four. Then it's successful. Like that. So the point is you don't worry about it. You do what you're supposed to do, following these four principles, and then whatever you're supposed to get, you'll get. Right? The law of attraction, yes, you believe you can do it, like this and that, or rich dad, poor dad, you know, you're born rich, you know, so you can do it. And these are all ones that are just trying to encourage you to identify with the field that you can do it. Right? So most of them are there because most people are very insecure. You know, some of them are goal-oriented because you have these dynamic, fired-up people, but they don't know what to do. right? And then some get into the real practical thing like that. How many people can actually work that efficiently? If they could work that efficiently, they would be getting results. So in other words, people who could work like that, but they're not quite understanding it, then you show them that they can do it. But the point is the ones that could do it would figure it out themselves anyway. Because they would be active and they'd find this plan didn't work, make that plan. You know, I made this goal that didn't quite work, change the goal. Or, you know, I'm enthusiastic, you know, already it's just, you know, I should direct my enthusiasm. They're already successful. They don't need to read the book. People who read the book can't do it. The people who can do it, the people who can take advantage of the book don't need to read the book. The people who can never take advantage of the book are the ones that read the book. You understand? That's the point.
Mark, that's like Srila Prabhupada saying, if you're already convinced about chanting Hare Krishna, you don't need to read my books. I'm writing these books to convince you to chant Hare Krishna.
Yes, yeah. But convinced means completely convinced to the point you get to.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Getting closer. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.